You awake in darkness. Your mind is clear. But soon, you begin asking questions. Where are you? Who are you? Who put you here? With each of these questions, a crackle of electricity shoots around you, illuminating your surroundings. You realize you've entered the brainstorm. Welcome to RPB, the role-playing brainstorming podcast.
Hello, everyone.
It's so deliciously corny every time.
Welcome to the RPB podcast. This is your host, Rick Martin, joined, as ever, with Don Godfrey.
What's going on, everybody?
And Maggie Martin.
Hello, everyone.
See, I'm new to this whole professional podcasting game. I don't know if anyone out there has heard the Blonde Wave podcast, but it's not super professional. And so I was like, how am I going to do this intro every time? I was like, I'll just go back, listen to what I did the first time, and write the script.
Are you serious?
And then I'll play the music and I'll read it out. But then I realized, I could just take that audio clip from the first one and play it over.
Okay. That's a savings.
So yeah, it's a learning experience for everyone here on this podcast.
Yeah. I know nothing. I was born yesterday. So.
All right, so this is the second episode. The first one has not yet been released to the public, so we have no feedback. So we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing, for better or for worse. Although I did tweet out and get some questions from some people. So if you're interested in getting a hold of the show, you can hashtag RPBQ&A or shoot us an email at rpb@blindwave.net. Also, be sure to check out blindwave.net shop, because there's a PDF there that you can buy as a sort of supplement for the show to teach you how to use some of these techniques that we're using and write your own adventures and things. So
specifically for the first episode, right?
I'm hoping to have one for every episode.
Yeah.
Is the idea. So we'll see how it goes.
We better be productive today.
All right. So let's start things off with... I wanted to talk about gender and race today in role-playing games.
Oh, good. That would get a little too real for me otherwise, I think. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been watching Star Trek The Next Generation for the first time.
Oh.
And they handle a lot of like gender and race issues, but through alien races and alien genders.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hit so close to home that it's uncomfortable, but you're still able to explore the depth of those kind of issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you can do in role-playing games as well. I particularly have seen it in the Dragon Age role-playing game, in that sort of video game series. Like, the elves and the dwarves are sort of... there are characters in that world that are racist against those sort of sub-races and act, you know, terribly against them. And I guess you see that in, like, the Elder Scrolls and...
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of it in Elder Scrolls. And because apparently the Argonians used to be just basically a slave race to the Dark Elves or something like that. I'm not sure exactly. I'm still learning. But what always frustrates me about those games is that, like, when they show you these examples, they don't really let you do much about it.
Sure.
They don't let you flex your non-racist muscles.
Intervene.
Yeah.
I think that's something The Witcher does really well, is it allows you to intervene or not intervene, or, you know, intervene one way or the other, or be neutral. But what do you guys think about advice for GMs and for players, and just in a story manner of non-human characters to start with?
Well, I mean, you've got the players that are basically using it for one of two things. One is they want to kind of explore those issues, or they want to talk about those issues, like kind of work it through their own head, or they want to do a cliched version of whatever they're doing just for like laughs and giggles and getting into really weird situations, basically.
So I've usually seen one of two things. Either they want the race for a story purpose, or they want it for the stats.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's mostly when people choose a tabaxi or something like that. It's because they want either to talk like Jahir or something like that, whatever that character on Skyrim was, or they want to run really fast and be able to climb.
Yeah, so I think, as with everything, you're going to have to approach it in a couple different ways. It's always going to have to start with a conversation, I think, with everybody at the table. This includes the DM kind of setting the tone for what kind of game he wants to run, and then making sure he has buy-in from all of his players. Because when you have those disconnects where, like, one player wants a very, like, interpersonal conflict, but other players aren't into it, you know, you're going to have a bad time.
When one group of players wants a serious fantasy RPG and the other wants to climb up a dragon's ass, for example.
That could be an example.
Oh, how random of you, Rick.
But mechanically, it's possible. So, you know, those kind of conversations to make sure everyone just is on that same page. I think Matt Koval just released a whole video about this idea, about, like, pitching your character. And I'm sure we'll delve more into this here in a second. But even the idea of, like, well, what races are available? Because just because they're in a source book doesn't mean the DM maybe wants them to be available or played, or doesn't really want.
I ran into this not too long ago. I had a player wanting to pull out it's a Gensia or Genesai, or I'm not sure exactly how it's pronounced.
I think I've heard of Ganassi.
Ganassi, okay. Yeah. Ganassi, but those elemental creatures. I was like, oh, geez, I want that to be very freaking rare, because I was wanting more of a, like, kind of a simpler classier sort of, like, basic world. And that would be, like, really weird. No one would have heard of them, practically. So I was like, how about if you want all the cool stat increases, right? Like, that's the main thing you want. We're just going to reflavor a dragonborn to have been messed up by extra-dimensional energy, which is basically what those creatures are anyways. One of the ways they can be created is by exposure to the elemental planes. And so it's like, okay, you're a dragonborn, but you've been messed up by it in the elemental exposure. So that's how you're going to get all your fun stuff. But you're still just a dragonborn.
And that happened before the adventure started. That was, like, their backstory.
Yeah, yeah. We just fold it in, reflavor it. That's your backstory. And they really loved it.
So I've done a similar sort of thing, but, like, through the campaign. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so you want to be a warforged, or you want to be a tiefling, but that doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense in this world and in this particular area. So instead, like, one of their goals was to become demonic or to become, like, warforged, you know? So they made decisions and there were actions and consequences that then led them to be cursed in such a manner so that it made sense in the world and in the story instead of just, oh, now these creatures exist and, you know, you'll find them in every shop corner or something like that.
That makes a lot of sense, because, like, every story beat, basically, instead of giving them gold or a weapon or something, you could basically say, oh, it's like, your arm's been ripped off. You find an artificer that creates this warforged arm for you, and you just slowly replace more and more of their body until they're happy with themselves.
Yeah, instead of just treasure or something like that, it's a good thing to try and give a character something meaningful to them as a reward.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I never thought about that. It's like, whenever they choose a weird race, I'll be like, okay, that's what you're going to be at level 10. Level 5, you're starting out as human, and you've got to figure out a way to make decisions to get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too. Because I, you know, on Twitter, I see kind of back and forth about this idea of, like, how real should you make, let's be specific and say, Dungeons & Dragons is, like, the main one where a lot of this comes up, because nearly any other kind of role-playing game is a little bit more rigid about the things that are allowed just mechanically or fictionally. You know, you're not going to see a lot of people try to hack Apocalypse World to have elves in it, like, on the first night.
Sure.
But since Dungeons & Dragons has been so widely spread and so easy to, like, get into, you're going to see a lot of people basically really just have to sit down and say, these are the kinds of things I'm into tonight, and, you know, try to work out, like, is this a game that's very serious, has these issues that we want to deal with? Even if it's just stuff like genre expectations. You know, I've tried to run, I ran a game online for a little bit that was going to be 5th edition, but it was a lower fantasy, gold is XP, like old school D&D kind of game, and I didn't want a lot of the more fantastical races, and I'll talk a little bit about how I think there's a spectrum of fantasy race.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mostly want basically humans only and that kind of stuff. And inevitably you're going to have one person to be like, you know, I hear you, but I really want to play this kind of Dragonborn sub-race, this thing. And it's just like, and, you know, adding that in can be fun, but then you have to do the kind of like, well, they don't exist otherwise, so you're the only.
Sure.
You know, is that.
And you'll be ostracized.
Does that automatically make them kind of like the main character, just from how weird they are?
It can. I mean, it can create.
It's the Jit Sims syndrome, right?
Yeah. You know, it can just add new role-playing aspects. But then that's the other thing, too. You know, a lot of people, particularly if you're starting out, don't feel very confident role-playing something that they're not familiar with.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, it's, you know, hard enough playing a different character than you are that's also a human when you're starting out, but also trying to play like an orc character that, you know, it's not like human races necessarily, in that there are gross physical and mental differences between the races in Dungeons & Dragons, like not just culturally, but
I mean, and there should be. I mean, that's something too. Where I'll make this plug, you know, as somewhat of an academic, that if you spend any time doing research of just about the other kinds of human beings, there's a wonderful diversity of opinion and experience, governmental structure, beliefs,
cultures
in general, right? Like we are a wonderful tapestry of different kinds of things.
Potpourri.
So, yeah. And so now imagine you're a creature who lives thousands of years.
Sure.
What's that going to do to your day-to-day life?
Yeah.
You know? And, like, that's just elves. That's just, like, the next level up.
Yeah. Or, you know, a race that never sleeps. Like, you know, what if there was a race of humans on Earth that never slept?
Well,
like,
there are examples of guys.
How different would they be?
There was... Oh, where was... It was somewhere in, like... It wasn't... I don't think it was China. But it was in that vague area of the world. There was actually a guy that lived in the village. Apparently, he hadn't slept for, like, 20-some years. Mm. He just was awake all the time. It was like one of those weird medical things that he just never slept.
Yeah, I mean, and just that kind of stuff, right? And maybe this will be more appropriate here in a minute, but the idea of like, well, how do you make these races different? How do you make them more than just a bag of stats?
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to the, you know, the end of the day, this is just, you know, an elf game where it's just like, I would like my pluses to be over here, please.
Yeah.
And so...
And, you know, you can also just tweak the rules to give that sort of thing to a human. You know?
I mean, yeah, because right now, particularly in 5th edition, you either get like a plus one in most things, or if you do the variant, you get less pluses, but you get feats.
Yeah.
So yeah, just say like, all right, cool. Well, now you're a human who has like a plus two, plus one instead. Like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I ran a one shot that was basically seven samurai, but with elves.
Nice.
But everyone didn't have to pick the basic elf, like, they could pick in orc type bonuses, but they're still an elf. They're just like a burly crazy elf kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know. I feel like that would actually help with some of the immersion. If there was, you could actually see like variation in the races themselves. Cause as it is, I feel like every NPC elf kind of acts like like this one sort of elf. It's like, instead of having the variations of like all of humankind, we have all these lovely variation. We have all of those bits are split up, and then everybody who acts like this is an orc.
Yeah.
Everybody who acts like this is an elf. Instead of having neat variation within the races.
And so this is a lot of people do find that semi-problematic. Because because Dungeons & Dragons does come out of a certain literary tradition that, of course, comes out of certain periods of history. You go back to like Tolkien, he's only writing in like the 20s and 30s.
Sure.
And obviously a lot of things get kind of coded in from then that we're still like holding on to. So yeah, we often treat these fantasy non-human races as either monocultures. So yeah, if you meet a high elf from one part of the world, lo and behold, a high elf from an entirely different part of the world is the exact same. We also, if we don't do that, then we just kind of like lightly skin the fantasy races to be read as a human race. So, you know, dwarves in most fantasy literature are either some kind of Scottish or some kind of Norse Icelandic. And that's, like, basically it, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, there's, you know, I'm not trying to suggest that there's any malice intended when people do that, because it's hard to create.
Right.
Yeah, it's like when I first started
new stuff.
When I first started role-playing, like, I'm pretty sure I chose, like, this crazy, like, sort of... I basically, instead of understanding how to role-play, I basically created the character that would kind of role-play itself, because I could just kind of cliche my way through it as a child.
Mm.
So, like, a dwarf. Oh, I like drinking. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and it's difficult enough to introduce this new race and learn all about it, and then also learn about the subcultures of all those different type of races.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly see why they do it. And you still see it in, like, Star Trek and things. I've been watching through the Next Generation, and, like, all the Klingons are pretty much the same, except for a few special cases. Yeah. And it's the same with...
And they're like a highlight of that episode, usually.
Yeah, yeah. They're main characters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually, that's an interesting point, because this is where I can mention, you know, some other role-playing games and kind of what they do with that. So Burning Wheel, which is an amazing game that I will eventually get to run. it's got a good amount of mechanical crunch for people who are into that sort of thing. But it also basically has dials for how much of that you put in. So a combat can be one dice roll, or it can be like a whole separate mini game.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That can take like a whole block of time, depending on how basically important you want the fight to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not very important, just do the one die roll. If it's a very important, like, climactic battle, it could take much more time.
Pendragon has the same thing.
Yeah. In that, the way they handle other groups of humans, and they do have fantasy races. They have the standard Tolkien fantasy races, dwarves, elves, orcs, and giant spiders. what they do is, when you make your character, you come up with a series of little phrases or words that are supposed to be like stereotypes for that group.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, as the player, get to decide like which ones are true for you and which ones are not true. Like, how are you
The other races think they're true,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly, right? Mm. And so that way you can kind of get this idea of, well, what do other people think of me in the world, which is something that Water Darkness used to do all the time. You just have a little, like,
right,
stereotype chatter between each, you know,
faction
splat book, you know, that kind of stuff. But you could also say, like, well, yeah, everyone thinks that this group is like this, but I am not that.
Sure.
Right? And that is what makes me an individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So with gender players, I haven't had as much experience with players playing against gender.
I have
played against gender quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it doesn't super change the way I play.
Hmm. I
feel like the only time it really does is when guys play girls, but I don't know if that's true or not, or if it's just my perception.
I mean, I think, once again, it goes back to, like, who you're playing with and the kind of conversations you have about what is or is not cool. I vividly remember playing games with my parents, and there'd be a player who always played the same female type of character, which is fine on its own, but then it seemed like he had this kind of fantasy he always wanted to enact with this character.
Oh.
And that always made it a little weird and gross for everybody else.
Oh. You played this with your parents?
Yeah. This was someone else that was brought into the group. Not even a real friend.
Oh, dear.
My family. You know, and much like everything else, this is where reading widely and trying to understand more things, I think, is better, because I personally don't feel confident in playing a female character.
I shouldn't play them any differently.
But
yeah,
I just don't feel able, I guess, to, like, bring some of those experiences to the fore. And recently I was playing a game online with a couple of general, like, non-binary or trans folks, and, like, it's interesting to see how that kind of personal experience does come out in their role-playing.
It does?
Yeah, they generally have a more interesting take on how they enact their characters and the kinds of genders they present in the game.
I've definitely had a player that basically hit on anything that moved.
Yeah, and then that's the kind of behavior that I think, like, I mean, if the group's cool with it, I guess run with it. But
yeah, it's basically
I always find that one of those like crosses a line gets a little weird.
Well, as long as they don't try to take over every role-playing encounter with who am I going to hit on here, rather than actually like, oh, this other player maybe wants to be able to express some personal stuff or role-play something.
I mean, I think it goes back to, once again, like the conversations you're having. Like, is it done?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, now there's a whole trope online about people always want to like seduce the bad guys, but in more of that kind of like anime romance kind of way, not in like a
sure.
Oh, well, we have characters like Loki from Marvel running around. Yeah, who can blame them?
I mean, that's just it. Like, so I think I'm almost certain there's already a couple games out where like it's more about like romancing the dungeon than it is fighting it.
Yeah.
But you know, that is a style of play. But everyone has to be down.
Yeah, like, I've had some dungeon.
That sounds pretty hilariously awesome for like some one shots.
I've had some uncomfortable moments playing romantic encounters with both my brother-in-law and my mother-in-law. So, but I'm a professional, damn it, and I get through it.
That's just it. Just like a movie in the 40s. You know, this is where, you know, there are safety tools out there like the X card or lines and veils. Lines and veils might be a little bit easier. Basically, the idea is like, you know, there are some lines you won't cross. So you say, like, for instance, there is never going to be sexual assault in this game. Like,
sure.
It doesn't even come up. Bad guys don't do it. You guys don't do it. Off the table.
Right.
But a veil would be more like, you know, oh, you chat somebody up at a bar. Curtain closes.
Yeah. Cutscene.
The next morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you have the certain.
People have the covers up. You know, that kind of like.
Hallmark movie. Oh, they're smoking a cigarette, basically.
Yeah.
You know what happens.
Because that allows you to still have those kind of things, because some people do want that, you know, in a fictional sense.
Because
very few games actually have a mechanical reason to sleep to each other.
Yeah, it doesn't refill your health like in Grand Theft Auto.
That's right.
What?
It does come up.
I didn't play that now.
It does come up in Apocalypse World, actually. One of the ways that you build history with another character is to increase your relationship, often.
Romantically?
Physically?
Often romantically. Like Persona 4, baby.
Yeah. And so it's actually, you know, that's pretty interesting. But that's, once again, the game is set up with that as an option.
Yeah.
And I think even in modern Dungeons & Dragons, like, they've been moving away from that. You know, this isn't second edition, right? There's no harlot tables now.
There's no... what's the name of it? The book about, like, sex, basically.
Yeah, I remember.
There was the third edition.
Yeah. There was the fourth edition.
I can't remember the name
one of it. I know the exact same one because it was on our...
This is good content, guys.
Sorry.
You guys at home, Google.
Google that book.
Let us know.
Oh, gosh. But, I mean, as far as, like, role-playing it, I mean, when it's coming, like, actually story purposey is when it's like, oh, it has to do with I'm chasing an inheritance, or say I was the son that was passed over, or the sister that doesn't get anything, and so.
I mean, there's a lot of good ways of kind of playing around with that in a fictional setting, and there are ways of doing it like safely and cathartically that makes sense. But just kind of like with you know conversation about races, like. Does sexism exist? Does racism exist?
Does it exist within humans or just within sub-races? Because that's easier to take sometimes.
This is still a thing. When you're dealing with issues that, like, real human beings outside of elf games experience, it's always just good to, like, run a check. Be like, hey, are we cool about this being a game? We're like,
yeah.
Occasionally the shopkeeper's going to be kind of shitty at you.
Unless,
is that okay?
Unless maybe you're playing a horror game or something that the idea is to catch them off guard.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely other games that take a little bit stronger of a like position on it. I mean, Pendragon is actually an interesting one about
gender. Sure,
because it in the rules calls out like, hey, this is supposed to be an Arthurian role playing game. So like, Lady Knights.
Not really a
thing, but it's still, as I think a lot of good games will have this as another paragraph, is like, hey, if you really want to rock that, like, go for it. There's tons of examples of, like...
Here's how you can do it.
Yeah, like the Mulan style, like...
And also, like...
Dressing up, or, like, just going with it and remembering this is...
Wasn't there actually an example cited?
Yeah, there are character sheets for females in that of non-knights, because, kind of like in Game of Thrones... Females can have very powerful roles in that game and in that setting, just not necessarily on the battlefield.
Yeah.
But they also have ways that you can stat up, like a I would say Joan of Arc, but Joan of Arc never really fought.
Well, like a Brienne of Tarth, like if we're going to keep the Game of Thrones stuff. Or Mulan, once again, was the
sure.
thing I was going for. But yeah, but that, because once again, that is a trope that exists in both history, historically, and in literature,
mm-hmm.
Of, you know, a woman who does want to fight and isn't allowed, and so, like, has to masquerade as a male.
Right.
There was a famous Civil War hero who that was a very similar thing, right? Mm-hmm. She cut her hair short, and like it wasn't until she was shot that
her husband was killed, and she wanted to avenge him, so she posed as a man and went and fought.
Now, say your character wants to explore some of those like real issues, it's like it can't be, you can't keep hammering that same thing.
No,
like once they have their cathartic release and like have an in-world reaction and fix it. Basically for it, as long as they don't keep like harping on about it.
Well, I mean, this comes back to, you know, role-playing games in general, right, are larger conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So if a character does want to have like basically a defined path, I mean, let's pull another like Lord of the Rings reference and do Eowyn dressing up in armor,
mm-hmm.
going kills the Witch King. Like, that could have been a 4-session arc.
Sure.
Where that's the only thing, like, the game's over, essentially. Like, you decide to make it a shorter campaign,
mm-hmm.
because it is only about that. Mm-hmm. Or do they get that one moment, and then basically the focus turns to someone else, or so someone else's story.
Or you can always retire characters. Like, I think that's something a player and a GM shouldn't be afraid to do, is once a character's story is over, just let that character retire, bring someone in new.
Yeah.
I've always been fine with that.
I've always tried to talk to my players when this player needs to go, when it's time, when it's story time, you need to be able to let them go, and then we'll make someone just as awesome next time, and they'll have just an amazing experience.
And it's one of my favorite things when that character comes back into the story.
Mm.
Under a different role, or just as a supporting character, something like that, like,
or as an NPC, or
as a lord of this castle, and it's like, oh, you know him, and they're actually like amazed and excited to meet him.
Well, the thing too is like you get opportunities to, as a player, if you basically give up control of a character whose story arc has, you know, basically been completed. You know, if the DM brings that character back in as an NPC, like there's an opportunity to do a little like light code DMing.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, the DM can say, like, here's the things I need to happen, but you roleplay this character.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so much fun.
Like,
it's like, here's the stuff that's happened in the meantime. This is why this has happened. Run with it.
I've had that happen once.
This is the information you know. Go crazy.
I was planning this campaign, and then I had to move, and that character still existed. Like, he didn't die before I left. And so, like, I Skyped in once and, like,
yeah,
brought the character back to be kind of like the NPC and helping them out. And, you know, I even got to do a couple roles to, like, behind the scenes kind of change their circumstances. So
a little different, but I had someone suggest, or jokingly suggest, I'm not exactly sure, in Discord that I should bring Maggie or someone in to roleplay all the female characters.
Hmm.
Because your voice sucks.
And I told them... My female voice is impeccable and indistinguishable.
Yeah. It sounds just a hair off from Splug, I'll be honest.
Perfect mimicry, right? That's the thing.
All right, so I want to move on to a segment, which I have an awesome audio clip for.
And now, Best Supporting Cast goes to...
I turned it off, I swear. It's not my fault.
They know what's happening next, babe.
Ignore that second sound clip. Nothing,
yes.
Nothing matters.
But best supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the Oscar season, so always appropriate, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, I wanted to do a little brainstorming,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of the name of the podcast. I had this idea. It's not necessarily for a particular character. It could be. But I was thinking of, this is just an aspect of wizards in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So those out there listening in the podcasting world might not know, but I get lost a lot. And I would like to think that there is a logical reason for such a thing. So I was thinking, wizards in this world can never go through the same entryway twice. Because if they do, they randomly get teleported somewhere. So if they want to go into an inn, they come in the door, they have to leave through the window. And if they want to go back in, they have to find another window, another door, or...
That's insane. They would never live anywhere. They'd have to be traveling nomads. There'd be no schools.
So eventually, they, you know, become mad wizards or whatever and just live in a tower and never leave it other than through teleportation.
Mm. And then you have a mad wizard suddenly appearing in someone's cornfield and then wreaking havoc?
I mean, my thing
that
is
sounds
like,
great.
Does it have to have like a door? Like, what are we counting as a
like if they always go through this door?
Well, I just like the idea. Shigeru Miyamoto, the designer of Mario, had a quote, and I can't remember it exactly, but basically he said that there are so many doors in this world, and every single door has the possibility of leading to a new world and an adventure. Huh. And that was kind of one of his things to come up with Mario and Zelda and things, was he imagined these doors and he would go through them and he would end up in these worlds. So I just like that idea of a character and or of a trait of a certain subset of characters or something, or it could just be a particular character, a particular wizard has this curse to where he can never go into some place the same way twice. He'll just magically get teleported somewhere.
So, yeah, man, that would be a real pain. Like, you could never get your groceries in, like, the same place for a very long time. And, like, he'd have to have, like, helpers. Oh, he would just go places, and then someone else would have to go in for him, do his business, and come back out. It's like he'd just be this... He'd turn into, like, Chekhov's gun of, well, like, being useful.
But... Wizards also have, like, invisible servants that they can cast... Things like that.
Unseen servant and those kind of guys.
Yeah, and he'd have to just, like, scry to people, like, just on the other side of the door, basically.
Though, obviously, this kind of character is... The way you introduce them is that they hire the party to go, like, shopping.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Like, maybe it starts kind of arcane and it seems like an adventure, and eventually he's like, all right, and now I need
milk.
And bread.
Some eggs.
Oh, and...
New pair of pants. Can you...
I saw this lady in this one shop one time. I haven't been able to find her since. I can't go back in there. Could you make another door?
But I had this idea of, like, you know, there's a hallway, and he's gone into the room, and his friend or someone he cares about is still in the hallway, and he forgets about it, and he wants to run and save them from something. But as he goes through, he teleports, and that person's lost.
I just thought of, like, the Scooby-Doo gag where it's just the hallway of doors, and you're just, like, coming through
perfect.
Another doorway.
Man, that could be a really, like, even a neat set for just, like, a horror sort of game.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that being, like, a magical curse, even. So if it doesn't randomly teleport them, if you do want to do the Scooby-Doo bit... like, every time they walk through the door, it just links to another doorway.
Within a certain distance, like, radius or something?
Yeah, like, you could scale it.
Oh, clearly. Gosh, that would be so annoying.
Like, everything acts as a portal.
Or useful. Like, if you had it set up to where you kind of, like, had an escape door sort of thing, like, you always kept the door near you, that could teleport you at least, like, 200 yards away or something like that. That'd be a good way of, like, getting away.
I mean, what's great about this kind of stuff is, for the most part, it can be a little half-baked if it's for an NPC.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, like, GM fiat, where they just, whatever they say, it just works. But for stuff like this, like, if you were going to curse a player with this ability, you'd have to think very hard about, like...
Sure.
Okay, because so you step through a door, and it's in 100 feet, and there's another door. You know, there's a whole lot of, like, mechanical... bits to come up with. But if just an NPC, then you can just be like, you know, yeah, he walks through the door and he tries to walk back out and he just vanishes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could once again be another whole adventure where you're just trying to, like, find this wizard, even if he's an ally. Like, he keeps forgetting that he can't do that and he has, like, blink somewhere else. You know? Just like, oh, we gotta go find this guy again.
You walk outside and you're like, Harold!
Yeah.
It's not quite the same, but and we might go back to this campaign at some point. I had a dwarf, Ragnar, that was like fading in and out of time for you guys. Mm-hmm. And it was this sort of cool mystery in that he was talking about things that hadn't happened yet, and just having NPCs that are helpful but have a mystery about them, yeah. I find engages players.
I mean, this goes back to if you have a high fantasy setting where magic is kind of, you know, all over the place, you can do so much. You know, once again, we have so many superstitions from our own, like, lives that what if those are true?
Sure.
Right? So, yeah, this, once again, could get a little exhausting, so you'd probably want to pick, you know, two or three main superstitions that are just true for your world, so you don't have to track down, like, everything. But imagine, like, you're in a game, and somebody says something negative, and if no one knocks on wood, then it happens. Jeez. All right. Or, you know, actual gremlins come out, or, you know.
Step on a crack and break the orc's back.
Yeah, like, that's just it, right? Like, there are all these little things, and you can just do, like, a Wikipedia search for...
old wives' tales.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff that did happen, and just be like, all right, cool, so these four are just factual.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, maybe they don't come up, or maybe they can become curses for certain characters, so certain characters, like, always have to, like, throw salt over their shoulder, because otherwise, like, something will come get them.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's tons of these little things that can add a bit of flavor. And that holds true for creatures as well. Like, you can give creatures odd ticks if you want a puzzle-solving kind of Dungeons & Dragons.
You can
Speaking
even...
of that, I just, this last week, I ran across something really neat, is a little addition to 5th edition. These two medical students wrote a addendum or whatever called the Malady Workshop, where they basically put in real, like, kind of health solving logic into D&D, where you could make your own diseases and maladies depending on how powerful it was. You basically spend points to give it, oh, you can catch this within one day of being exposed to it, or like maybe it's transmitted through casting spells, or if it's transmitted through normal means like coughing and all airborne and such. And they give really awesome tables. It's it was written by Jason Bakos and Thermis Paraskevas. It's called the Malady Workshop. I'd highly suggest checking it out. It's really short, like only 28 pages, but I really loved it.
Is that just on like the DM's Guild?
Or yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think that's where I found the copy of it, but it was I really liked it. I like because it seems like so many of those in these places we have, oh, you'll have like a curse or something. Or some sort of a magical thing. If you get hit by something like a poison or something, oh, it'll stat drop you a little bit, but you don't actually like have long term effects from it. And your NPCs don't show those sort of long term effects usually, unless it's like a big story issue. So being able to fold in a lot more diseases and active issues for the NPCs could be really immersive. Now, this is a fantasy setting, so I imagine people probably don't go to D&D to have to think about things like cancer, but that could be a way of kind of making the world a little bit more real to them, because they know how they feel about that sort of stuff in real life, and so it might connect to them a bit better in D&D.
And it depends on the players and kind of what they want to do, but I feel that role-playing can also be the same with video games, a measure of like a therapy or some way to work out something that's hard to work out in real life, but you can play in this safe space and deal with these issues as someone that's slightly separated from yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's actually some work being done in D&D as therapy and those kinds of things by psychologists. And actually they have a whole books on how, once again, you can just do those kinds of things, you know, safely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the main way to look at it.
Also, it was called the Book of Erotic Fantasies.
Oh, of course.
that just came in. Somebody with a piece of paper came in and like,
yep,
slid it over to you.
Breaking news.
Yeah, our PA came in. I was like,
oh,
dropped it in.
I wish we had a PA. Go on.
So should we try to come up with a couple different other weird NPCs?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Let's see here. So I've just opened up Wikipedia, and I'm just literally looking at stuff like lists of superstitions. Like, that's all.
Okay.
That's all I got. So, let's look at... Ooh, actually, one that I quite like also has a connection to one of my favorite books recently, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is a fantasy book about two wizards kind of bringing magic back to England during the Napoleonic War.
Okay.
Right, so it's very cool. It's a very good bit of fiction. And actually, it's more like, if you want to use D&D terms, like a wizard and a sorcerer.
Okay.
Like, one has intensive study, and that's how he does magic, and the other is just, like, innately good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sort of like Sherlock Holmes-y, sort of.
Yeah, and there's a little bit to deal with a lot of, like, the fairy and, like, kind of elves, particularly being, like, a negative force, which, of course, in, like, folklore is a little bit more accurate. So sure. Like that. So, you know, here it mentions that there's tons of mirror-related lore, you know, mm-hmm. like breaking mirrors is Balak and all this other stuff. But there's also this idea that, you know, mirrors are perhaps like another dimension,
mm-hmm.
or they're another doorway that connects to other places. You know, so you could have a whole, you know, wizard maybe who's combined every mirror in existence. So he's created kind of a, I don't know, medieval surveillance state, because he's able to like scry through every mirror, and if it's large enough, he could even like maybe walk through it,
mm-hmm.
through a connecting dimension to wherever another mirror is. So, and then that would create a lot of superstitions, and maybe you would subvert the, you know, don't break a mirror, you'll have bad luck. You might instead create a, like, whatever you do, break mirrors.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, the mirror wizard will.
Yeah, that's cool.
You. The mirror wizard will come get you.
Yeah, not necessarily come through them, but just talk through them.
Yeah, or I mean, that's the
cast,
like,
spells through them, cast smoke through them.
That's the whole Bloody Mary stuff as well. You know, speaking to the mirror three times and then, like,
yeah,
there he appears. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can see a lot of cool things for that.
Since we're still on wizards.
And again, making, like, particular parts of the world have these superstitions. Mm-hmm. And so it originated in this city, but the players encounter the superstition further away, and it's just a superstition. But eventually they find themselves in this city where it is real.
Yeah.
And that's where the superstition originated. Like, I find it fascinating finding, you know, where did words come from? Where did phrases come from? Where did superstitions originate, mm-hmm. in things? And having an actual, oh, it wasn't, you know, some guy was drunk and broke a mirror and then stepped in front of a carriage and died. And that's why they said, like, oh, it actually is an evil entity,
mm-hmm.
or it was originally,
yeah,
kind of thing.
So my idea also involved magic, mm-hmm. because, but it was also connected to all of that malady stuff I've been reading up. Basically, went back to the four humors, the black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and blood, how, like, everything's supposed to be kept in balance with a person.
So you mean, like, the Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
Is that? Really?
Yeah, technically. Because each of the major, the medieval humors,
I didn't think one,
like,
of them had a black little headband, though.
No. It's not.
I feel like an idiot.
No.
Yeah, you're right.
It's because of their personalities.
Yeah.
Because, like, each of their ones, like...
One's the artist one, one's the, like...
One's the angry one.
Choleric one, one's yeah, the...
Exactly. Like, that's... If you have four of any character...
They're like, always, like, group, the four seasons.
You can usually, like, boil them down into, like, those four broad categories.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind for your Dungeons & Dragons group.
Indeed.
Yeah, basically. So I had the idea of you... Basically, a wizard was trying to come up with a cure for some sort of a malady, and he accidentally split himself into his four humors. That's so there's awesome. Four of him running around, and they're all like the great not opposites, but
the,
like,
personification,
the personifications
these.
Of right. his version of melancholic and phlegmatic and sanguine. And it would be easier to play if you were just kind of, it'd be easier to roleplay it as a DM just because you've got them all split up.
Yeah.
And so you could really kind of,
I would love
it. Easy for the players to understand
as well, like, different characters, player characters encounter them in different orders, so they think it's the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. That's like a great slow burn.
Yeah.
I was just watching with my family the series of unfortunate events, the last season that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, they have a couple characters who are, well, twins and triplets and those kind of things come up a lot. And eventually there's this character who are like, well, one is supposed to be good and one's supposed to be evil, but they're identical.
Sure.
And they act the same way. And you really don't know which one is which. And that just made me instantly think of, like, having an innkeep. And it's actually run by, like, twins or triplets or quadruplets.
One of my favorite versions of that is Vampires the Masquerade, the video game. There's a nightclub owner and... or a pair of nightclub owner that are twins. And one of them is good and one of them is evil. Mm-hmm. But it turns out they're the same person with a split personality disorder.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool twist on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, but that's, yeah, that kind of stuff would be so fun to, like, role play different ones. Then I think the players would just start to think that the character's probably just a jerk sometimes.
Yeah. Or you play it in a game like, oh, what's the name of it? It's not Trailblazer. It takes place in the Iron Age. Basically, it's a role-playing system about creating relationships with characters and, like, helping them through their troubles. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to help this guy through his troubles and, like, cheer him up. But it's just his personification and there's no cheering him up.
Yeah, there's no fixing, you know, 'cause, like, the melancholic wizard.
And like, with the four humors, like, that used to be... That was, like, the epitome of, like, medical technology back then. Like, that was what people believed. That was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like going back to, like, old, like, history that was fantasy,
mm-hmm.
basically, and going back to get ideas for D&D there. Because it fascinates me on a deep level. Because it's like, oh, my gosh, we used to believe this. This was real.
It's the same reason why you see Greek and Roman and all these different creatures that were a religion and real to some people, but now to us they're just things to use in Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Speaking of creatures, or
unless anyone has anything to say more about.
No, I think it sounds like a segue.
All right. And now for the creature feature.
Okay, I gotta ask, who did that? Was that Calvin?
Of course.
I was gonna say.
you don't recognize your own brother?
I mean, I know he does voices amazing, so. Yeah,
that's just what he sounds like all the time.
Okay.
Know. He actually puts on a different voice in every other video.
Yeah, he just had a cold that day.
Yeah. So what do you got for us, Rick?
Well, I actually had something.
What do you got for us, Maggie? Sorry.
Yeah. This comes from history as well. We've been kind of on an old mythology spin today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is an Akateko. It's called like a red-handed child. This comes from Japanese mythology. And what really caught me is I was just going down a huge list and it said red hand that hangs from a tree. And I was like, oh, that sounds terrifying. Like hands that just reach down, like just strangle you or something. But apparently it's always paired or accompanied by a ghost or spirit of a young, beautiful woman that sits at the base of the tree. And when you get near her, she kind of lulls people into like a trance or kind of a fever state. And I was like, oh, that sounds terrifying. And I was like, oh my gosh, what if this town was kind of like infested with this creature? And like any time you were in a house or anywhere with like a roof or something over your head, the hands could like reach down and grab you or strangle you or something like that.
I mean, that's a Zelda boss or enemy, right?
Yeah.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Those hands that like come down.
Dang you, Nintendo. Grabbing your own mythology and using it. That sounds great.
What are the odds, right?
F it.
But yeah, that could be cool. Well, I mean, and I would also just skin that and use like a dryad.
Sure.
Yeah.
And just be like,
I also just love the idea of having something that players can see that invokes terror in them.
Mm.
That's not like a monster, but like in Blair Witch, the witch's cross or whatever, just some sort of symbol that the players see and they know, oh, something's about to happen, or just sort of a foreboding thing that even this thing in itself might not be dangerous to me, but it signifies that danger is here and we need to be on guard.
Yeah. Yeah, right, because, you know, mysterious women hanging out in forests or
just like a weird red hand hanging from a tree. It's like you would know something is up with that. And as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, that kind of freaks me out.
Yeah. Well, and then I was just thinking, you know, back to the superstitions too. If you start putting in your scene descriptions just a black cat, that like
sure
hangs out and like walks walks by, and then you like unload something terrible on them. But if you do that
enough times,
more than twice, probably.
Probably just the, the second time I'm calling that they're going to go, oh, you crap!
Yeah. I fireball the cat.
Yeah, right?
Pretty much.
And that's where you get to decide, like, is the cat
right
killable? Or, well, actually, even better, it is killable, but then, like, it keeps coming back.
Yeah, or it was the only thing stopping this greater evil from appearing in this world.
Cats are often protectors.
Yeah. yeah, so, I mean, I love that. I love... there's a lot of mythology out there.
I feel like D&D really grabs from European and like more
there's a lot
mythologies
of
weirder
stuff. Particularly if you're looking into kind of shoot, I of course can't remember the name of it exactly. I want to say Thai maybe. But there's a couple different places where the monsters are somehow more horrific.
Yeah.
And you get them occasionally, because I think, is the Vargul still in D&D?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's just like the head of a maiden with like a bunch of entrails like flying around.
Yep, it kisses you, and then eventually you turn into one as well.
Yeah, yeah,
you just turn into a flying head.
Yeah,
You know.
I remember you made us fight one. Yeah. It freaked me out.
But yeah, that kind of stuff, it does come from these more kind of, I don't want to call it understudied, because there's plenty of people who do work in these areas, but let's just say it is not as popular to look outside of, you know, Iceland, Greek, Roman, you know, go out into these other cultures. You know, I quite like the Wendigo as a good monster.
As far some as more like Native American sort of flavored stuff.
Yeah, nice indigenous, and the idea there is that it's either about cannibalism or greed, depending on how you like want to slice it. And you can make it either like obviously villainous, almost Yeti-like, or you can just make it like emaciated murderer.
Like the super thin, long limbs, kind of like always never getting enough to eat, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So and there's a lot of cool stuff like that.
With the woman, and also the idea of the sirens from Greek mythology as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like the whole idea of monsters being part of the natural ecosystem, even if it is like high magic. So the idea that like the woman is just the anglerfish worm.
Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So there are plenty of fish, you know, deep in the ocean where they'll, like, float something out that looks like a tantalizing bit of food.
And maybe you wouldn't even
and
know.
And it, like, gets eaten otherwise.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even know that, like, the monster was around, except that people keep, like, dying underneath trees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
See, now I just imagine, like...
Or you just find people hanged in trees and... Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, this is a rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
Or maybe the watch been around and cleaned up.
Or you know, people think it's a suicide, but actually it's this creature.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another one that that really caught my eye. It was called, oh, shoot. I didn't write it down. It's like a Buri-Buri. It basically some sort of a spirit that like clings onto you and creates feelings of cowardice.
Okay.
And
that's pretty good.
Like, and makes you shiver.
Yeah. That'd be terrible in Pendragon.
That would be. I mean, I was hoping that the one you were going to talk about is the demon or spirit from Japan. I, of course, forget its name. So look it up. Where all it does is it kind of like looks like a normal person and then it moons you. And it has a giant eye in between its butt cheeks.
Oh my gosh.
And its whole purpose is just to like be kind of unsettling. Like that's all it does. Like it doesn't want anything else out of it. It's just like, get a load of this. And you're like, and then you just move on.
I'll admit, I did a lot of reading into like weird Japanese mythologies. Just like went down the whole list in Wikipedia. And I was a little scared at how many of their monsters were women that hurt guys, like usually by ripping off their, you know, dangly bits, and they're terrified of women, just like in any way.
There's probably very good sociological reasons. And
well,
I would assume
it's the same with Greece, right? I mean, you have Pandora and a lot of Medusa, like a lot of the fearsome things are females. It's
a lot of witches, Circe from the Odyssey.
In these ancient cultures that were ruled by men, they feared women gaining power and usurping that.
Man, we need to have a race where it's just spun around. It's like all the guys have all the, like, the really creepy
creatures.
I had
an idea for a creature as well. So I love the idea of a villain that you see their point, and maybe you decide they're doing the best thing after all.
Yeah.
So there's this village or city that the players go to, and almost everyone there is blind. Mm-hmm. And but it's like a utopia. They all have servants that take care of them. They're fed, they're drink, they have no wants. And basically what's happening is there's a demon in town, and he's like, you can live here, but you have to give me your eyes. Mm-hmm. And if you do, it's this utopian environment, and it's completely all these people's choice. So the players come into this town and see this, and they have to make that decision of, do we kill the demon? Because it's a demon, and maybe it's has some sort of nefarious plan or something, but all these people are happy,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Well, in that case, you have to make the in-the-world choice of, like, are all demons evil, or is it like...
Or are they all just ineffable and strange?
Yeah, kind of like...
It's like, this just demon collects eyes. I don't know.
Elder Scrolls has the Daedra, and, like, some of the Daedra are good people, like Azura, right? Like, there's like, three of them that are good, and then there's, like, a whole pass of them that are evil, like, really terribly evil. But they're all just kind of slightly weird. Hmm. So are demons more along those lines? And especially if you have a party of players who are lacking anybody in wisdom, like I'm currently playing with, so you can just lie to them, and then no one knows if you're lying. So it's like, will they wonder? It's like, well, we don't have a cleric to tell if they're actually telling the truth. Like, are these people bespelled?
Or you make the creature, whatever one of the characters' backstories is, vengeance against this type of creature.
Yeah, like, well, that's the
thing. Or just like, really ugly, and they think, got to kill it.
How hard do you want to push the issue, right? Because if you just present it as, there's this village, they'll elect to give up their sight or physical eyes in order to live peacefully and happily. You know, yeah, making it a demon, like, pushes the players one way, but, like, making it, like, they can't go into the town unless they also give up their eyes.
I was thinking that...
Like another... Because players will push back on that a little bit more.
Sure.
Than but if it's just like, man, we just hang out. Like, it's cool. Don't make it weird.
Yeah, the idea was like, you can spend one night there as a trial. Mm. And then in order to spend another night, you have to do it or you'll be kicked out.
And then that's the same thing, too. Like
they'd have to have someone on the outside presenting the other side where it's like, oh, his wife or something is in there enjoying and being there like that, but he doesn't want to give up his eyes because he wants to see his children. Mm-hmm. It's like, you gotta ping into those like really tight things that could really bother some of your players.
Or you don't, because players just want to kill things.
Yeah, I mean, that was my thing, is like...
Yeah, sure.
Making it a demon, like taking a step back and just making it like an elf.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, those are all little levers, and you'd have to know your party to know what exactly works for them, if they are.
I've always wanted to have a wizard.
Just murderers. Putting any challenge in front of them will make them want to just murder it. But if you do have some nuance, if there are shades of gray in your own campaign, yeah, just be aware. Because if you do choose something and you haven't set up ahead of time that demons are just like dimensional beings. Demons.
Right.
You know, another fine myth kind of way. You have to make sure that's clear.
Sure.
Because otherwise you'd be like, yeah, it's a demon. They're like, oh, okay, so we can murder it.
And we won't get caught by the watch.
And it's an inherently good act.
Or they do it, but the people don't get their sights back. And now...
the demon had the eyes.
Yeah, and now they're just blind in this world that's not going to care for them.
Oh, man, that would suck.
That'd be... Oh, my gosh. And the players are like, let's leave.
And now the players are villains, and now other heroes are being hired.
Yeah, it'd be exceptionally cruel. To pull that out of a party.
That
That's pretty good, though.
Gosh.
All right. Well, I think it's time for the final segment, of which I do not have a sound clip for, unfortunately, because Aaron was not here to record his segment, The Lazy Bastard.
Aaron, what was he supposed to say?
What's in the box?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good.
Insert Brad Pitt.
What's in the box?
All right, so this is the segment where we each come up with two items for a D6 table of the party goes to a chest or a bag or a satchel and open it up, and before their eyes lays...
You have to give me a minute here.
Okay.
I'm coming to this. I'm doing it live.
We're doing it live.
I'm popping ahead. Okay, so I'll do one at a time.
Okay, so I'll go first.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had the idea of, and I did get the idea slightly from somewhere else, but basically a pin that when you stick it in a person, you gain temporary control of like their gross motor movement. Now, setting the time limit on that would be one thing. I also wanted to make sure that they would be, the people that got stuck would also be very aware, and like their mind would be completely free, and they might even be able to talk just like through maybe like gritted teeth or something like that. But like you'd have very short temporary control over them. And I got the idea from an episode of Red Dwarf, which that was a key hilarious plot issue they had. It involved a lot of like players slapping the people slapping themselves and doing stupid stuff like that. They literally had like an RC controller they were controlling people with.
That's perfect.
I would
still have it be an RC controller in a D&D game. I love adding that like old school where it's just like you discover a spaceship. There's a robot. You know?
But like I thought that'd be like, okay, so maybe there was someone that used it in the town and there's this huge mystery involved and they're trying to figure out, and one of the players gets stuck and does something crazy, or like someone accidentally drops a baby into something terrible and like something horrible happens and it's like, who caused this? And they're trying to figure that out. So I thought like, oh, there could have a really cool story set up around that, or it could just be a little pin that's like one use only, that's like if they really need it, they can like blow dart this thing and have control of its gross motor movement for just like a couple rounds or one round or something like that, depending on how strong you want this item to be.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
So my first thing is, I love the idea of having unique spells in a world. So like every wizard can learn Fireball, but also having things that this wizard came up with and he, you know, this is the only copy of that spell, or he's the only one to do it in the world. So the party finds a bookshelf, and in it is a scroll. And the scroll allows you to, going back to sort of the taking your sight idea, you can take one or both of your eyeballs and turn them into an orb that allows you to, it's like for a wizard, a spell implement or...
Like an arcane focus.
A focus, yes, exactly. And it's super powerful, but you have to lose one eye for it, or if you want to make it extra good, you have to lose both eyes for it.
And then someone could steal it.
I mean, I've played a character that did that. It's always totally worth it.
So. Yeah.
Oh, like Augura in Dark Crystal. She had like an eyeball she could pop out and like look places.
But it would give extra bonuses for like scrying and seeing into the future. And
maybe dark vision, crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, vision of faraway places. But
roll it like a marble around corners.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And then you get dirty.
Just a little bit of spit right back in.
That's my first one.
That sounds good.
I end up having three overall because the two are kind of joke ones.
Okay.
And I feel like it's cheating. Just to give you like
one joke, one real.
Well, I mean, two joke ones and then one real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have a D7 on the table.
So in the chest.
Yes.
Smaller and smaller chests. So you just keep opening them. And
Russian nesting doll style?
Yeah. So that's just the main one.
And then you have to tell the players, you spend some time opening chests until you finally...
you physically can't open them anymore.
Your thief has to get lock picks in order to like hold them with tweezers.
They
and,
take
like,
it to a jeweler.
Them. Yeah. Sorry. There's a smaller chest. This is the smallest chest we've ever found. And then this next one is also based on like a meme joke. But I think it's great, particularly if you do it right. So the friends that you made along the way. So they open the chest and like the NPC characters came out that were allies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, oh, well, I'm glad you think so much of me.
Oh my gosh.
That's
like who your true friends are.
That's the
and
real,
your true friend will come out of the box.
That's the real treasure.
Oh my gosh.
It's the friends you made along the way.
That's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Players won't. Players will hate that.
No, you'd have to like ask the players ahead of time, like who's really important to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Yeah, then they come out of the box.
All right, so those are my two fake, like
okay,
less
that
player
sounds,
enjoyed
great.
Ones.
I love those. Okay, so my second item was I called it the Blood Lantern, but basically it doesn't burn like normal oil or anything like that. It burns blood, but not a specific type of blood. It can burn any type of blood. but it only glows when there's creatures of that type nearby. So if you think you've cleared out the whole dungeon, you put some goblin blood in the lantern, you walk around, you check, and it's like, oh my gosh, you missed one, or something like that. Mm. Or if you're looking for a very rare creature and you happen to have a vial of its blood that you were sent to find it. Or I even had the thought of, well, maybe it works even more specific than that. Maybe you have a vial of a certain person's blood and then you're trying to find them. So you carry around this lantern with that blood in it to try to, oh, they're nearby, somewhere around here.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Can other people see all of the light, or can only creatures of that blood type?
No, anybody can see the light, okay. But it'll only glow when there's creatures of that blood type around.
Okay.
So kind of like Sting, except in a handy dandy for any race sort of package.
Yeah, a gory form. Okay.
Yeah, gory form.
Yeah.
Do you That's have cool. another one?
Yeah.
It's your turn, Rick.
I know, but I'm still thinking.
Oh, geez.
You got to come up with joke answers. They'll get you through. Though they would work because they're great. So this could be, I think, a special option. I wouldn't necessarily put this on your plain D6 list. I think this should be if the thief, crits his lockpick or something like that, or in some ways make this a special event. But the chest is a friendly mimic that will now follow the character around.
From Discord?
Yeah. And acts like a bag of holding. But it does need to be fed. It is still a mimic.
Ooh, sure.
In all other ways.
I like it.
So it likes you fine.
So it has a bottom jaw that you put stuff in, a top jaw that actually eats crap.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it just has a marsupial pouch of holding that you can
put in. Gosh, that sounds so cool.
Yeah. But yeah, you still have to feed it.
Cool.
Other things.
All right, so I got one.
Good.
So there's this order of monks or knights that are a group against evil, but they don't go out and fight the evil. Instead, they give the player this shield, and the shield is magical. It can block magic. It can block anything. But what happens is the damage gets transferred to one of those monks.
Oh, and the players don't know about it yet.
Or either they don't know about it or they do know about it. And so, the monks are
I bet two of them died after that hit.
Are giving their lives to fight this thing. Mm-hmm. And eventually they might run out of monks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that horrible moment when you get hit by the shield and it actually hurts you. It's like, oh shit, I just killed an entire order of monks. Or maybe the monks are running around saying, do you want to join our order? Do you want to join our order? And they get kids off the streets. And we'll feed you. And then the kids start dying off because you keep taking risks.
That's true. And maybe part of the adventure is the players have to go to that monastery to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
That's practical.
And of course, there's a number of doors that you have to go through as part of the order. And so they find this barrel of monk keys.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
That sounds like a cursed item. That's terrifying.
Well, that was my last episode, guys. So
I love it. I love it.
All right. Do you guys have anything to plug before we end?
No. If you want to hear more of this nonsense and a bunch of retweets, I guess, just follow me on Twitter. So theory, W-O, context, theory without context.
Anything for you, Mag?
No, I just been having a lot of fun reading that Malady book about diseases. Because they have one side of the page is all just physical symptoms, stuff you could really do, and then the other side of the page is all magical symptoms, and they have it for all the systems of the body, the endocrine and the brain. And
you're plugging other people's things, you get no benefit for plugging. That's not how this works.
Oh, sorry.
It's very nice. That's a nice thing, right? Support small creators.
No, indeed.
I they're medical students. They're poor and they're crazed. They have no sleep. They need everything. And they play D&D. That's great.
You're talking to an English major here.
Yeah. They're not going to be poor for long.
All right. Well, I do have some stuff to plug. Blindwave.net. You can find the PDF that accompanies this episode and the last one as well. Check that out. It can guide you through fleshing out some more of these ideas into an actual adventure that then you can share with others.
I want to play a couple of these ideas we've had.
Also, check out patreon.com/blindwave, where you can get the next episode of this on early access as well. So check that out. And think that's pretty much it. So thank you for joining us for this edition of the Role-Playing Brainstorming Podcast. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you for having us.
Yep, thanks for having me here.
Next week, too. Mm-hmm. Or...
Thank you for joining us for this edition of RPB, Role-Playing Brainstorming. Today's hosts were Richard Martin, Danal Godfrey, and Maggie Martin. The intro music was The Other Side of the Door by Kevin MacLeod at InfoTech.com. I am...